From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents, context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Oakland, California.
Concord, California.
Fairfield.
Foothill.
Coming up, we bid farewell to the man who's been the voice of our station for 37 years, KALW's Alan Farley.
I don't create a personality. I don't create a different voice for the radio, or I don't have a different name. What you hear is what I am.
Then we celebrate El Día de los Muertos by calling on spirits to face the future.
There's an amazing altar in the exhibit that has you log into your Facebook page and generates an altar to you using images, sound, and video.
And a local musician remembers her brother.
He turned me on to the Beatles, which was sort of annoying because he was the kid brother. I'm like, oh, why'd you discover them first?
Honoring our loved ones. Today on Cross Currents, stay with us. The Bay Area arts world recently lost one of its greatest champions. The voice of KALW, Alan Farley, passed away on Sunday, October 21st, after a bout with pancreatic cancer. He was 76 years old. The loss has been enormous for our station. Alan was the weekday voice of 91.7 FM, guiding listeners through our schedule of programs and hosting several of his own.
My name is Alan Farley, and I've been a producer and announcer at KALW Radio.
Over the course of 37 years at KALW, our entire audience benefited from Farley's deep knowledge and love of the arts. At the time of his passing, Alan was on KALW's air more than 30 hours a week. He hosted book talk, interviewing authors from around the globe. He chatted with performing artists on open air. And he brought us the biographies of Bay Area luminaries by letting them play their cherished music and tell their life stories on My Favorite Things, including our very own Martina Castro.
Welcome to My Favorite Things. I'm Alan Farley with a program where I invite a guest to come on and play his or her Desert Island Discs, favorite music. And my guest this time is the managing editor of KALW News, Martina Castro. Welcome.
Thank you so much, Alan.
Today, we're going to hear a bit about Alan Farley's favorite things with his friend, KALW's Ben Trefney.
I have to admit, I never really understood it. But Alan Farley had a fascination with the multi-talented Noel Coward.
I went to a marvelous party. I must say the fun was intense. We all had to do what the people we knew might be doing 100 years hence. Can you beat it? We talked about...
I came across a book of his lyrics, and I thought maybe I can try and play a recording of every song that he ever wrote. So this was the Songs of Noel Coward, which is a daily, a weekly half-hour program.
In an interview with KALW's Neil Swinkles, Alan described his love for all things Coward.
And as it turned out, there were like 256 songs in the book. A lot of them weren't recorded. But anyway, I did that program for over 4 years.
On KALW. You could say we were an enabler.
And in the process, got to meet people. I got in communication with the Coward Estate, went to England for the first time, was at the ceremony in Westminster Abbey where Noel Coward's memorial stone was unveiled in 1984. And that sort of snowballed ever since then.
Would you say it got out of hand? Or
No.
Well, maybe. Alan was obsessed, but he was hardly a monomaniac. In fact, I think Alan liked pretty much everything that was mellifluous, which might be why he got into radio in the first place.
You mentioned radio, and one of the things I wanted to talk to you about was the quote, good old days of radio, unquote. Were they really?
Yes, they were marvelous.
That's Alan talking with actor Vincent Price.
I think that if I were running an acting school, I would make every student work as hard at radio as at any other technique. The radio actor, and I did literally thousands of radio shows, you had to create everything. You had to paint the scenery, you had to paint the face on the voice, and it was terribly exciting. And there was a group of actors in Hollywood and New York who were radio actors, who I think were some of the very best actors that America's ever produced, were radio people.
Radio people. They can create art out of radio.
You're listening to Radio Lab.
This is 99% Invisible
I'm Roman Mars.
From WBEZ Chicago, it's This American Life, distributed by Public Radio International. Stay with us.
Alan Farley brought art into radio.
Welcome to Book Talk. This is Alan Farley, and this week, another visit with one of our favorite authors, one of our favorite mystery authors, one of our favorite people. Stay tuned.
Alan was sincerely excited for a lot of the things he got to do, like having the chance to talk with people he admired. He loved it, and they loved him back.
With me in the studio today is Baroness James of Holland Park, otherwise known as P.D. James, the novelist with her latest novel, Death in Holy Orders, another Adam Dalgliesh mystery. And welcome back to KALW.
It's lovely to be back, Alan.
Well, it's great to see you again. I'm so glad to read another one of your novels. I'm addicted to them.
Alan had the chance to talk with thousands of artists from around the Bay Area and all over the world. Some left a lasting impression, as he recalled in a 2006 conversation with KALW's Sandeep Roy.
When Salman Rushdie was here, this was still in the days when he had bodyguards, and they came out, I don't know whether it was that day or the day before, and checked out everything before he came. I was certainly impressed by that. Yes, but the one thing I pride myself on is that I've never been intimidated by my guests. I just consider him the person another guest.
The list of those guests is remarkable. Conductor Michael Tilson Thomas, columnist Frank DeFord, and writer Kurt Vonnegut, with whom he shared a philosophy on life.
We used to be a compassionate people. I think it was important that we be compassionate, and because we decided that the Soviet Union was our enemy and the evil empire and all that, is compassion is suddenly discredited. And so we have a quite heartless society at the top. It's true of the lower levels of our society, but at the very top, at the top of corporations and at the top of the government, the people are mean as hell.
Well, it seemed like the last couple of administrations just sort of, I mean, that was almost their guiding principle.
Alan expressed his political opinions there, but it was a rare moment. He never wanted the conversation to be about him or his thoughts. He wasn't the star. He was the star's vehicle.
My main point, which I've said many times now, is the point of the interview is for me to shut up and to listen to what the guest has to say and then follow up what they say.
That's how Alan saw his work at KALW as well. He improvised. He just figured out how he could best fit in from the time he got here back in 1975.
Well, when I first came, it was, I don't know if you'd call it a format. It was just sort of like a mom-and-pop radio station that was run by two teachers from the school district. Three, actually. One was the chief engineer, and then there were a program director and the station manager.
But it was a start. Alan's interest and involvement in the community grew with the station. He began hosting performing arts specials, which became open air. He started relationships with the Berkeley Symphony and SF Performances. He launched a weekly AIDS update, which would be absorbed into Out in the Bay. He saw KALW create an award-winning call-in show in local news department.
And it's become a station that nobody ever heard of to a station that really has made a place for itself in the scene, an important, indispensable place, I think.
In that interview we heard a bit from earlier, Neil Swinkles asked Alan what he was proud of. Alan was bemused by the question.
Gosh, I never thought of it in those terms.
But after thinking about it, Alan Farley said this.
Well, one thing right now is just keeping some coverage of the arts, because it's been decreasing everywhere in the daily papers and the other broadcast media. We're still doing that coverage here. And I would say the work with the Noel Coward Estate, too. I'm proud of that. I didn't really contribute much to Richard Pryor's success.
Oh, yeah. Alan was Richard Pryor's road manager for a year. And he was chairman of the math department at Morehouse College. He was a Renaissance man before he found his calling on the air.
I was never trained how to speak on the radio, how to be a presence on the radio. When I first was on, I simply was shown how to run the controls. And just my own natural sense of what I expect somebody to say.
I don't create a personality. I don't create a different voice for the radio, or I don't have a different name. I know there are a lot of people in the business who do. But I'm just, what you hear is what I am.
Beautiful music moved Alan Farley. So did good theater, storytelling, and baseball. Alan had season tickets to the San Francisco Giants, and once in a while he'd share them with me. Up until a few years ago, he was one of those long-suffering fans. And then the team had that unexpected season of torture.
It was just gut-wrenching.
The good kind.
Incredible.
The kind where they win their first title in more than 50 years.
I was trying to drink in every moment of it.
When our news department made a documentary about the Giants' World Series campaign, we made sure that Alan had a starring role. His honest, ever-present emotion came right to the surface.
I couldn't believe it. It finally happened. Oh, I'm getting choked up to think about it.
Alan passed away the morning of Sunday, October 21st. It's worth noting that a lot of people who gathered to mourn his loss here at the station the next day, they said they hoped the Giants would win a game for Alan Farley. Well, they did. They won every single game until they won it all.
Everything went right. It was just, it had to happen. It was just destined to happen.
It's hard for us not to think that he had something to do with it.
World champion, San Francisco Giants.
A few weeks before he passed away, I visited Alan at his home, so one-bedroom apartment in San Francisco's Western Addition. He was sitting back in a recliner next to a stereo system with a classical music CD right on there. To his other side, an entire wall of books stretched from floor to ceiling. It was as if literature was wallpapering his room. A TV remote control sat beside him, and I thought when he pressed that on button a few hours later, the San Francisco Giants game was going to flicker right on and give him a few more hours of engagement. We talked for a while, Alan and me, maybe 45 minutes. I asked him about that thing I just couldn't quite place. What was it about Noel Coward that turned him on so much? He looked at me, surprised, as if it weren't obvious. He was so talented, he said. The music, the stories, the poems, the culture, so rich. He just reflected the good things in life, he said. I can see it now. Noel Coward had those beautiful qualities. So did Alan Farley.
That's KALW's Ben Trefney.
When the storm clouds are riding through a winter sky, sail away, sail away. When the love light is fading in your sweetheart's eye, sail away.
We're holding a memorial for Alan Farley on Monday, November 19th, that's during Thanksgiving week, from 5 to 8 p.m. at the War Memorial Veterans Building, home of Herb's Theater in the Green Room. It's a place that represents Alan's love for the performing arts community and their love for him. How do you remember Alan Farley? Let us know on our feedback line. It's 415-264-7106. That's 415-264-7106. Leave us a message and you might hear yourself on the air. You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. Today, we're remembering our good friend and colleague, Alan Farley, who passed away on October 21st. But this also happens to be a day when people all over the world are thinking of their lost loved ones. That's because November 1st is El Día de los Muertos, or the Day of the Dead. The Soma Arts Center in San Francisco's South of Market area has been marking the occasion with community members and artists for the past 19 years, but this year is special.
Day of the Dead is falling very, very close to not only our presidential election, but to the end of the Mayan calendar, or the so-called end of the Mayan calendar. So there's a lot that's in transition right now.
That's Rio Yanez, one of the exhibit's curators. KALW's Stephen Short spoke with him about the significance of this year's exhibit, which includes an altar to a key figure from KALW's past.
You may recall all the talk this past year about an ancient Mayan calendar that says the world could end in December 2012.
There are texts and traditions coming down to us from the Maya which suggest this is not just the end of a calendrical epoch, but the end of an entire age of the Earth.
Curator Rio Yanez sees it another way.
I think for a lot of people, it's kind of recognizing this state that we're in as a state of transition, as a state of flux, as a state of many possibilities and of renewal. So I think a lot of the altars, especially a lot of the very personal altars, are about seizing the opportunity for renewal and for change.
As curator of the Soma Arts Day of the Dead exhibit, Yanez kept this in mind when selecting this year's theme, calling on the spirits to face the future. Yanez and his co-curator, René Yanez, who is also his father, always put a personal touch on their curation. Each year, they dedicate it to a person they knew who has passed away since the last Day of the Dead. There are two dedications for 2012. One is John Buchanan, who was director of San Francisco's Fine Arts Museums from 2006 until his death last December at age 58. He continued planning shows well into the future, even after his cancer diagnosis, because he knew that others would benefit. Daniel Del Solar, the other honoree, was a Latino media activist, editor, photographer, and public media broadcaster. He was general manager of KALW from 1985 to 1992. Del Solar signed his emails, "If you want peace, work for justice," and encouraged people to live vibrantly. He died last January at age 71.
In addition to being a curator, I'm also a visual artist, and I've worked with John Buchanan, and I grew up knowing Daniel. So this year was especially personal to me.
Well, I'd be interested in having you take me to the Daniel Del Solar altar and have you explain it to me.
So right now we're walking towards Daniel's altar, and I think what I really love about this space is that the artists who created it came together and actually created a living room. It's a physical space that you can walk into, you can take a seat, you can see videos of Daniel's kind of engagement with the many kind of scenes and movements he was involved with. And there's a lot of his own personal objects. I was really kind of touched to see his old Nikon camera sitting on a shelf in this room.
All three artists who worked on the altar, Miranda Bergman, Ana Luisa Cardona, and Nina Serrano, knew Del Solar personally, as friends and creative partners. The room they created includes traditional Day of the Dead offerings.
Marigolds, candles, but there's also a lot of kind of creative touches here. So there's protest signs, there's photos, there's comments that people have written on the wall to Daniel.
And there's a window with an out-of-this-world image.
That is a little bit of a mystery to me.
With a name like Del Solar, perhaps that's our solar system.
Absolutely, absolutely.
This one, like many of the altars here, is dedicated to an individual. But the father-son team of René and Rio Yanez have encouraged participants to be more experimental in their approach. Rio Yanez says this idea is spreading nationally.
More and more we're seeing altars that are kind of used to raise consciousness about political issues, to talk about concepts rather than specific people in what they honor. San Francisco and the Bay Area is generally ground zero for this movement.
The forward-looking theme of this year's exhibit certainly lends itself to the use of technology, and Yanez says artists have incorporated it more and more each year.
There's an amazing altar in the exhibit by an artist named Howie Katz, and it's an altar that has you log into your Facebook page and, based on the information on your Facebook page, generates an altar to you using images, sound, and video.
Yanez created an altar with San Francisco artist Stan Heller that requires old-style technology, 3D glasses.
We're talking about issues of hunger, homelessness, and healthcare. But it's also a very optimistic altar with offerings kind of towards positive outcomes for a lot of those situations that we're facing.
And as Yanez certainly knows, these situations can and will change whether or not we approve.
I think a lot of what's going to happen in the month of November is going to shape what the exhibit next year will look like, that's for sure.
Less sure is whether we, you and I, will be here next year to see it. Oh, I'm sure the earth will continue to turn, but some of us could be the subjects of altars rather than those who create them. Another reason to remember to honor those who have come before us as we face the future. In San Francisco, I'm Stephen Short for Cross Currents.
The Day of the Dead exhibit is showing at SOMA Arts in San Francisco through November 10th. Details are at KALW.org. And while you're online, tell us how you celebrate people who've passed. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. Our lives are full of important people, but places can matter to us too. That's what our community storytelling team here believes.
Here?
Here?
Here.
Okay, together. Okay.
Here. From KALW. Our Here producers are asking the question, what's a place in your neighborhood that means something to you, and why? Here's one response they received.
Hello, this is Nina Jo Smith, and a significant place for me is the Hotel Utah Saloon in San Francisco, California.
The Hotel Utah is important to Smith for lots of reasons, one of which has to do with her brother.
One, two, three.
He turned me on to the Beatles, which was sort of annoying because he was the kid brother. And I'm like, oh, why'd you discover them first? I'm a singer-songwriter here in town. I play ukulele and guitar and 6-string and 12-string guitars, write songs and sing them here and there. I was about, probably when I was about 10 years old, my mom was going to school to become a school teacher. And at that time, everybody was playing guitar. And, you know, the teachers would play guitar and get the kids to sing in the classroom. So I pretty much stole her guitar and taught myself to play, along to the radio and along to records like Joan Baez and Bob Dylan and things like that. I was good. I went to college and all that good stuff. And but still plan to, you know, continue doing music. New Year's Eve, 1979, a friend came to the door in the morning and let me know that my brother had died. And in a way, I wasn't too surprised because, you know, he was a guy, he was an adventurous guy, liked to drive fast cars and things like that. So I thought, well, it was maybe something like that, but it was really different. He'd actually been murdered. He was my only sibling. We were about 4.5 years apart, so even though we were, you know, I was a little bit older, in some ways we were like, I'm not going to say twins, but two sides of a coin. So I kind of felt like, you know, I should have been there to protect him somehow. Not that I could have done anything, but really I couldn't listen to any music for about a year. I spent a lot of time just, you know, being really silent. And so it was about really 10 years before I started playing music, or 20 years really, before I started at all. What I had done after he died was started teaching self-defense. I went full on into martial arts self-defense, and I figured out I'd probably taught close over 1,000 people, you know, men, women, children, elders, people with disabilities, and somehow I kind of felt like I'd earned my right to be on the planet and maybe go back to who I started out to be a little bit more. I guess the first thought I had when I started to play music again was, I wonder if I can still play my guitar. So I was playing around the house, and I had a roommate who said, you know, you sound pretty good. Maybe you should try, you know, going out and playing. So I started going out to the Bazaar Cafe open mic and playing there, and the Hotel Utah open mic and playing there.
You might think you're a broke down Ford, busted by the side of the road. Let me tell you what friends are for. They're to help you to carry a load.
I think the process of healing continues, you know. You don't get over it. You continue to go through it. You know, it's over 30 years for me. And, you know, this time in my life, I'm feeling real joy, maybe for one of the first times since that happened.
I want what's coming to me.
That was Nina Jo Smith. Her story was produced by Audrey Dilling for our community storytelling series, Hear, Hear.
Here's to the singing guitar man, goes by the name of Lee.
The song you're hearing is called Broke Down Ford, and it's by Nina Jo Smith from a live performance at the Hotel Utah. You can hear more on her upcoming CD titled People, Places, and Sings. So what's a place in your neighborhood that means something to you, and why? Answer that question online at the Hear Here website. That's HEARHERE.KALW.org. You've been listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. And today, instead of the usual credits, we'd like to share with you some people we're thinking of for the Day of the Dead. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba.
My grandfather, Earl Forey.
My dad, Harry Sterling.
My grandmother, Ada Krigbaum.
My grandma, Honey Robin.
My grandfather, Joseph P. Rubio.
My grandmother, Amuna Asalahi.
Rosalind P. Green.
My grandmother, Sylvia Newman.
My grandma Hoff and my grandma Hoffman.
Virginia Mullen and Abuelo Mero.